Well, we talked about there is a difference between discipline and punishment. Discipline is played out when we are loving. Punishment's played out when we aren't. So let's take a look at the difference. In your notes there, the difference between discipline and punishment. Underneath punishment, write, punishment is negative. Punishment is negative. And under discipline, right, discipline is positive. It's not under purpose yet. Above it, does it have punishment and discipline written out? Right at the top? Okay. Right underneath that, just write, punishment is negative, discipline is positive. And then if you have a place to squeeze all that in, right in there, discipline means to train and to teach. That's right there at the top, to train and teach. Just put that anywhere. It's really important to understand the difference, because if we don't get the concept out that it's about training and teaching, then we will always stay in the realm of punishment. And we're going to look at that a little bit at this point in time. The purpose of punishment is to inflict a penalty for an offense, something the child's done wrong. So that's under purpose of punishment. It's kind of like done in columns there. Purpose of punishment is to inflict a penalty for an offense, for something the child's done wrong. You did that, so you go sit in a chair for 2 years. You know, you're inflicting some kind of penalty. But when it comes to discipline, the purpose of discipline is to train for correction and maturity. So when a child's acting out, instead of going, you go sit in that chair for 2 years, you're thinking that child needs some training. That child needs some direction. Now there could be some reasons for them acting out, and we'll get into that too. But you need to be thinking this way. Discipline means to train and to teach. Some people believe that kids, a lot of parents believe that kids come ready-made. Yeah, but they don't think you do. And if they do, they don't read the instructions first. Children need to be discipled. That's what discipline means. Children need to be trained and corrected. Oftentimes when I'm sharing with parents, I tell them, you know what? Correction's part of the job. Plan on correcting. It really helps if you have that perspective, because you think that the child's supposed to be doing the things they're supposed to do. And they don't come that way. Some kids do, but most of them don't. Correction's part of the job. And as a teacher, you need to realize, the problem is we don't know how or what. We'll deal with that in a little bit. So, we're looking for maturity, the purpose of discipline. Now, the focus on punishment is on past misdeeds, what the child did wrong. And that kind of plays out, okay, you broke the law of our house or our class, so now you are going to go to jail. You're going to be punished. And a lot of people use the timeout chair thing, which is ridiculous. But anyway, we'll talk about that too. What's timeout do? I love timeout. You know, when I was a kid, hey, that's no problem. I'd rest and get ready for the next one. You know, it's like timeout does no correcting. But we don't have options sometimes, and so that's what we go to. We go, oh, you broke. Here's your consequences. Go sit there for whatever. But discipline focuses on the future. Not the past, but the future. What the child can learn from that experience. In our household, we brought our children up. They all knew it's not wrong to make a mistake. You just need to learn from it. So over time, you're going to learn from it. So we're looking at the future, not the past. Past is more punishment-oriented. But okay, they did this, so the focus, we got to focus on the future the next time around. I have parents come up to me and after I've done some discipline communication with them, and I'm parenting, and I go, well, I'm really trying this stuff, but I messed up on this last one. That I didn't do it right. And I need to, when that happens again, do it right. I go, don't worry. And the question was, should I go back and take care of it? It was like a couple of days before. I said, no, don't worry about it. And she kind of looked at me like, really? They get off the hook. I said, they aren't off the hook. It will happen again. And then you're going to be a little more ready to deal with it. Because we aren't talking about, I just want them to stop doing that thing. We're talking about discipline. I want them to be corrected for the future thing, if you would. And so that's what we've got to change our mindset oftentimes with. The attitude of punishment oftentimes is anger and frustration. You know, you're getting in the way, or you're causing my schedule to be messed up, or whatever it may be. Anger and frustration is often motivated out of anger. Whereas for discipline, the deal behind discipline, as we've already said, is love and concern. Love and concern, which is always motivated out of love. This whole idea of discipline. We want to see the child learn and grow. Learn and grow. I don't want my four-year-old to act like they're four when they're eight. I want them to grow. And I'm not going to expect my four-year-old to act like they're eight, because they aren't eight yet. And so many parents are driving their kids to be what they can't be yet or shouldn't be yet. I am a firm believer in childhood. And there are some parents that do not believe in childhood. And I believe if you don't live out your childhood, you're going to go back sometime and try to live it out again. Live as a child. That's what he's got them at. He didn't make them, you know, an adult when they came out. Can you imagine? How old are you? One? Wow. How'd that work? Well, you know, it happened to Adam. You know, it's not a big deal. No. It's like they are that age. Work with them at that age. Childhood goes so fast. Oh, man. So fast. Resulting emotion for punishment oftentimes is fear and guilt and anger. You know, its focus is on the injustice of what just took place. But under discipline, the resulting emotion is security. There's security in that. Discipline focuses on the child learning wisdom and growing mature, and developing the attitudes to follow after the Lord. That brings security to the child. So important. Now when you're involved with disciplining in this way and you're loving on them and disciplining and correcting them and doing that, I just want to guarantee you, for the most part, up to a certain age, they aren't going to walk up to you and say, thank you, I feel so secure in the way you've disciplined me. I really appreciate all your effort and energy. It's not going to happen. But there will be an attitude difference, and you'll see that attitude difference, and you'll understand that. You know when a parent is doing what is the right thing to do, whether you're rebellious or not, over the whole situation. So, this is simply put, there's so much more, but hopefully you get the idea in regards to the difference between discipline and punishment. Punishment really just creates anger, because nothing's getting solved. And that's why the timeout chair, there's nothing being solved. It's giving the parent or the teacher a break to regroup. But as I said a minute ago, it's giving the child a break to regroup. So what's the break worth? We want to develop something more than that. You know, the rule of thumb is you give a child a break. I don't know if I should tell you this because I don't agree with it, but I'll tell you anyway. You give a child a break for the minute per age. So if it's a three-year-old, they got a three-minute break. What difference does it make? Three, five, six. But that's what you'll read in the book. Yeah. that seems like a punishment to me. That seems like, okay, you broke this rule, so now I'm going to punish you. It could be a consequence. Hold that thought for about an hour. Because we'll address that. Okay. Next one is the study of children. Study of children. Some believe that children are all the same, no matter what age they are. They just are qualified and classified as a child. They're in the child classification. Well, I got a question for you. How old is a 7-year-old? You sure? You sure? How old's a 7-year-old? This is not a trick question. Okay, well, we got one answer, 7. How old is a 7-year-old? Well, it has some trick to it, but it's not a trick question. When I ask that question to you, you are immediately thinking chronologically, right? Because that's a stupid question otherwise. A 7-year-old is 7, right? Wrong. Should I? Had a break at this point so you could think about it and discuss it over the break. We all act that way because of school. We act that way because there's kindergarten, there's first grade, and there's second grade, and on down the line goes. So we get this mindset that if you're in second grade, you're 7, typically. I mean, you may be slow, fast, whatever, but you're 7 as an average. Chronologically. How about socially? How old would that 7-year-old possibly be? 5? 12 even. So now we got a new dilemma. They're 7, but socially they're kind of acting goofy. So they're acting under 7. How about mentally, that 7-year-old? There can be all different states of a mental capacity for a 7-year-old. How about height? Have you seen all 7-year-olds a certain height? Some can be taller, some can be shorter. We had this cute little girl, and she walked by in front of the office with her mom a couple Sundays ago. Somebody said, you won't believe how old that girl is. And my thought was probably first grade. And I believe they said 4th. Different height. How about spiritually? How old could that 7-year-old be? They may be 0. They may not be born again. Or they may come from really solid background. They may have some real substantiality of knowing who God is in their life. So they may be even more advanced than a 12-year-old. So now, how old is that 7-year-old means a little bit different of ideas and what's going on. You see, we tend to make it out because we have first grade, second grade, third grade, that all kids, if they're in that grade, then that's what they are and maintaining, and that's not so. That becomes and creates a problem inside your classroom. Because not all kids are identical. They're all different. They're individuals. They have different needs. And when we start looking at kids the same, we're looking at them wrong. We need to look at a child individually. Now, when you have 20 or 30 kids in your class, it's pretty tough to look at them individually. You're going to have to do some group things. But when you're working with one child, or even if you are in that group, you treat them as a little person. As we've talked about already, you treat them as important enough to listen. I don't know if this is true or not, but I read in a book a time back where this professor who was highly acclaimed at a prestigious university resigned. And he resigned to go back to teach elementary. And when his colleagues were asking him, what in the world are you doing that for? You've achieved, you've got your goal. His answer to them was, would you like to etch your name on a hardened brick or one that hasn't been baked yet? He got so educated, he realized where the education needed to take place to actually change a life. That's when they were pliable. That's when they would want to learn. So ages play into it, but oftentimes we make the mistake and we don't allow for that child to be a little bit different. We don't allow for, because they should be acting the norm age. So if they aren't, what are we thinking? Punishment? We're going to punish them for not acting that way? Or we're going to discipline them and guide them and care for them into maturity of that. That's what it's all about. That's what teaching's all about. That's why it's so important. Next one. Unconditional love. God loves us unconditionally. And we need to give that same love back to children if we're there representing Him. Matthew 5:46, if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? Matthew 5:46. I tell my teachers, plan on loving the unlovable. Plan on loving the unlovable. You know, it's easy to love God. It's easy to love perfection. And the question is, do we love people? Are we expecting perfection out of them before we can love them? Plan on loving the unlovable in your class, and you will be amazed at what God does inside your classroom. It will be a safe class inside your classroom. And the kids will blossom and grow and mature in that hour and a half or so. You know, when kids are hurting, I equate it with the whole deal of when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, which one yelped? The one that got hit. And you got a lot of kids coming into class that have been hit, whether it's physically, emotionally, spiritually, they've been hit. And they're looking for help. They're looking for somebody to band-aid them. They're looking for somebody that really represents God. That's the bottom line. And you know, you're in that place there, the child's thinking that represents God. So I'll just come on in and I'll have God bandage me up. And sometimes God can't because that person's not on the same page for the Lord. Next one. You're a model for the child. The child is watching you, whether you know it or not, and you most of the time won't know it. That's why I love to have families in as teachers. And when I say families, I don't mean just husband and wife. I mean their kids too. I love having husbands and wives ministering. We have a high percentage of husbands and wives ministering our children's ministry. We have a high number of men ministering in the children's ministry. That's where they need to be. We have little boys coming into the classroom that don't have dads. We have a lot of them. And I want a godly man to be there to say, this is what a godly man is. And we have little girls that today, more and more, don't have moms. Breaks my heart. Just last week, a mom walked out on a family. You know, for stupid reasons. And all they're doing is they're thinking about themselves and they aren't thinking about their kids and what it does to their kid and how it will mark them for life. If you come from a divorce home, those kind of things, you know what I mean when I say it will mark you for life. But greater is He that's in us than in this world. God heals that. God God cares for that. But nonetheless, you're still marked. And I want a woman in there that loves Jesus Christ with all of her heart, so that that little girl knows that there's more to life than what I'm experiencing right now. They're watching you. Man, I was watching my coaches. I wanted to know what a man was. I didn't have an idea. I never saw anybody shave. That might sound stupid, but man, if you haven't seen it, you go, well, I don't know. What do I do here? You know, those kind of kids walk out all cut up. No. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's so important. And that's what I want to have inside the classroom. They're watching us. And if we're talking about stuff we shouldn't be talking about, what they're thinking is, oh, well, that must be okay. If we're treating them a certain way, they must be thinking, hey, I guess that's how a Christian man or woman treats somebody. I guess that's the standard. Okay, well, that's what I'll do. If we're rude to people, oh, I guess that's part of life. Teachers are often rude to the kids. Often. And we had some words about that yesterday, about if you hinder a child, it's not good. Not good at all. Know this, so they're watching you. Maybe over time that it happens. And then the last thing is, at this point, is be consistent. Avoid inconsistency. Be as 100% consistent as possible. And that's virtually impossible. But I'm telling you, that's the goal. And the only way that that gets achieved is if you are being led by the Spirit big time. Because we are inconsistent people. It's a work of the Spirit to enable that to happen. And that is extremely important to understand. Well, we've talked a lot about more philosophy kinds of things. And actually, okay, now I'm in the class. What do? I got little Johnny, and little Johnny doesn't want to listen to me. So that's where we're going to go right now. Inside our classrooms, you will find a huge poster, bigger than this, this huge poster. And when a child walks in our class, they know what to expect. A visitor knows what to expect. We have a poster on one side of the whiteboard and a poster on the other side of the whiteboard. We will talk about that other poster tomorrow. But today, this is classroom rules. This is discipline in the classroom, and we're going to talk about that. This is a concept that brings families closer together. This is a concept that causes classrooms to be close. And it's a life concept. And it comes from Ephesians 6, 1, 2, and 3. It is the job description of a child. Ephesians 6, 1, 2, 3 says, that in a nutshell, that the child is supposed to obey the parent and to honor mom and dad. All right? Now, most parents do not realize, and most children do not realize, that they have a job description. A child has a job description. I just was down a couple Saturdays ago at this big old, it was about 1,000 people conference for the Awana clubs, and I was teaching some of this stuff, and they were soaking it up. Important information. Important. And all of our classes, kindergarten through the sixth grade, are on this track. They understand this. I do a 13-week course on honor explaining this information. So you're going to get maybe an hour of explaining, but there's a whole lot there. Want more information? Biblicalparenting.org. It's in your notes. I've already got that there somewhere. Dr. Scott Taransky. And a gal by the name of Joanne Miller, they've teamed up together. And it's powerful information if you ever decide you got a parent. You can go back to your notebook and go, you know, I think there was a website. So there you have it. But I want to get into this. I want to explain this because most parents and Sunday school teachers do not realize it's a lot simpler than we make it out to be. We make it so difficult. And this is how you can know it's from God. God's way is simple. Man's way is complex, complicated, confusing. God's way is simple. And if a family will follow these guidelines from the get-go, from the beginning, they will have one of the most incredible home lives ever. I can't even explain to you what our house is like, how honoring it is, how quiet it can be. Well, we get a little noisy, goofy, and crazy, but I mean, not problematic stuff. I wish I would have known this with my when I was bringing up my boys. You know, I didn't know this. I read that scripture all the time, but I went to all these. I mean, I've taught all kinds of parenting systems, if you would. And the typical parenting system depends on, and we're going to talk about obedience, obedience and obedience only. That's all they talk about. And yet, what's obedience even mean? I'll do what I say, of course. Is that it? And we go in handicapped, we don't even know how to do this. Now here's the problem. If a child has a job description, who's going to train that child in that job description? Who's responsible according to the Word of God? Parent. Parent is. Well, a parent, the actual root meaning of a parent is to teach, to train. The Hebrew form of the word parent means to train, to teach. All right? Good. Good enough. If you are training and teaching, you are kind of representing a parent in a classroom. Really important to understand. Problem is, even though it's a child's job description according to the Word of God, parents don't know it, therefore can't train them in it. Don't even know how to train them in it. Obeying and honoring. And we get halfway there oftentimes in the trainings, how to obey, but we never really figure out how to get them to obey. Just that's what they're supposed to do, and it's up to you now. Figure it out. And if you don't obey, then I'm going to punish you. And that's kind of our system. It's kind of weird. But we do that. We pass it on from generation to generation. Now, I'm going to jump around, but it's nothing new. Isaiah 43:7 tells us, we've talked about this already, that our purpose for life is to glorify the Lord. To please God. That brings meaning and fulfillment. Well, a cross-reference to Ephesians 6:1, 2, and 3 is Colossians. And you want to look at that sometime, Colossians 3:20, because it says the same thing, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. You know, you can find you can train a child to be fulfilled, and that's unique because most kids aren't fulfilled. We're told that it's well pleasing to the Lord for them to obey and to honor their parents. So if they learn how and what it means, they will find fulfillment in their heart and in their life because they're doing what they were created to do right up front from the beginning. So, we're going to take a look at three rules, three guidelines for life, three principles. And if we can understand them and live by them, it is very, very powerful. Definition of obey. Doing what somebody says right away without being reminded. Right away without being reminded. doing what somebody says. Anybody know who Ann Sullivan is? Pardon me? Helen Keller. She was her teacher, final, toward the end teacher. And she coined a phrase that I think is important to understand. Obedience is the gateway through which knowledge enters the mind of a child. Obedience is the gateway through which knowledge enters the mind of a child. It's a great movie. The Food Fight's awesome. She's the new trainer of Helen Keller. And Helen Keller, being blind and not able, she never was given a chair to sit at. She was trained to just go around this table with a lot of people and grab whatever she could grab and eat it. Well, Ann Sullivan decided that's not going to work. And man, never been a... When I was a kid, I was in a food fight in our cafeteria at school. But nothing like this. This food fight was like major. And that's where she realized, if I don't get this obedience, I'm not going to be able to train. That's how important obedience is. And you know, that's how important it is for our relationship with Jesus Christ. And if as a child we aren't trained to obey our parents, this is what's problematic. God made this work for kids so that when they got into adulthood, when the thing came around that we were supposed to obey God, that was no problem. But when we don't learn that, and we learn how to lie and deceive and not do what we're supposed to do, that carries over into our relationship with the Lord. And it hurts us. Oh, and by the way, this verse, even though I said it was a child's job description, I don't want to leave you just there. You see, God is much wiser than us, and He knows more. And He knows that in childhood is when we learn and establish things that are very often hard to forget and to get rid of. Spurgeon, you'll read this, has stated, first learned oft and is last forgotten. What we learn in childhood sticks pretty deep. So God says, okay, I'm going to put a job description down for the kids. But what happens to kids? Anybody? They grow up. To what? Sometimes I'm not sure. To adults. Now, if they were trained as a child to obey and to honor as a child, what are they going to do as an adult? Typically, they're going to obey and honor. Okay? But if it wasn't taught, and they become an adult and now a parent, it's their task to bring up those little monsters. And if we don't know how, because they don't come ready-made, they become that sometimes. We don't understand. So important. So, doing what somebody says right away without being reminded is the idea of obeying. They need to learn the skill of obeying. The difference between obedience and honor is obedience gets the job done. Honor deals with how the job gets done. The difference between obedience and honor is obedience gets the job done. Honor deals with how the job is done. I want to spend a second. You may have to put this on the back of your notes or somewhere, but I want to talk about the difference of honor and respect. Because if I would ask you, what is honor? Most of you would say respect. That's our concept. That's where honor has gone to. The word honor has been kidnapped. It's been changed over the years. Honor is not respect. It's totally different. They're both good, but they're different. And it's important to understand. Respect has its root meaning to fear. We respect outwardly. Respect focuses on a person's position of power or their office. You may know someone that is in an office that has power, and you respect that office of that individual, but they may be a personal friend, and then you may honor them as a person. Totally different. Families that overemphasize respect in their family life end up with relationships that are distant. They lack closeness. Honor has its root meaning in worth, in value. We value that person. We think that person is worthy. That's where honor is coming from. Valuing. We often undervalue. And we think what we're doing is okay because we're respecting. But that's totally different. Honor attaches worth to that person individually. Do you value them? Respect teaches manners, the proper behavior in the presence of others. So you can see a child that's got all these manners and look really nice, but they're really mean inside. But in public, they're doing what they're supposed to do. Big difference. Honor attaches appreciation for that person. I'm honoring that person. Respect can become a technique to make a family look good on the outside. I know families personally look great on the outside, and I know what it is on the inside. It's totally different. Honor builds the hidden bonds that provide strength and lasting unity. It's just the kind of thing where you don't even try to act like you just are. You are honoring to each other. Respect deals with behavior. But honor is a response that comes from the heart. Honor comes from the heart. So that's the next principle. Definition of honor. Treating people special. Doing more than what's expected. And having a good attitude. Treating people as special. Doing more than what's expected and having a good attitude. That is a child definition. There's so much more to honor. But since it's the child's job description and since we're using this for children's ministry, that's where we're at and that's what we do. Treating people as special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude.